frogs aren't reptiles. It's not like a square and a rectangle.
What are they?
They're amphibians. It's not one of those like all amphibians are reptiles, but not all reptiles are amphibians. I mean, they're two different.
Just means you go from water to land and vice versa. Whereas being a mammal actually says something about the structure of your body.
No, that's if you're amphibious, not if you're an amphibian.
Okay, this is getting weird.
Yeah.
It's like, talk about martial arts.
No, hold on. It's like saying something is mammalian, has some of the attributes of a mammal, versus is a mammal, which has all of them.
If you put all 15 minutes of this stupid conversation at the beginning of the podcast and no one listens to it, I will hit you.
Well, why? It's more fun than putting it at the end after the credits.
No, that's where it goes. That's where the dumb shit
have
goes.
Have we gotten bad results from that?
From, like, having way too long intros?
Yeah.
Yes.
Once or twice.
Every single time we've done it.
No. What, it's happened one or two times.
You know, what? I'm ready to see some people get the shit beat out of them.
I am, too. Although, I feel like I remember enjoying the second one more. The second one was the first one I saw, because watched it with you and Derek in theaters. But speaking of which, hi, I'm Josh. I'm an analyst here in Nashville, and I like to punch a bunch of folks.
I'm Rick Fox. I am an author here in Nashville, and you kind of took the thing I was going to say. Let me think.
I like to punch different folks.
I'm Rick Fox. I'm an author here in Nashville, and I have a brother who is almost as badass as I am, but is on the wrong side of the law.
I'm Brian. I'm an illustrator here in Nashville, and I'm tiny but fierce.
I'm Caleb, I'm an analyst here in Nashville, and I am a large apartment building.
And we're opinionated, and tonight we're watching The Raid. The Raid came out in 2011. It has an 87 on Rotten Tomatoes. Mm. It was written and directed by Gareth Evans, and it stars Iko Uwais, Anata George, Ray Sahetepi. There's a lot of, is it Indonesian?
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of Indonesian names that I'm not going to get correct.
No, you're killing it.
Yayan Ruhan, Pierre Gruno. Let me see. Sofiane Aloup.
Can I read this now?
Ariman Aji? Yeah, go for it.
A SWAT team becomes trapped in a tenement run by a ruthless mobster and his army of killers and thugs.
Isn't this the movie that, like, influenced the new Judge Dredd movie a whole
those
bunch?
Those two came out close enough together that, like, it's hard to say if one influenced the other.
Yeah. I can't imagine why that'd be true. Like, sure, they're both in giant apartment buildings, but one is primarily using guns, and this one is primarily using martial arts.
Yeah, like, I don't know what the case is there.
Dredd came out a year later.
They kind of feel different.
But I mean, that was a big enough movie that probably needed, like, a production time.
Sure.
I don't recall this movie having the tones of, like, I am justice. We're just kind of like,
but that's
here's
the Dredd
our
character.
Premise, now we're going to beat the shit out of each other.
Yeah, but the premise is oddly similar, to be
fair. It's a dystopian, self-contained super building, I guess, where you find a bunch of druggies.
Yeah.
The building that takes place in, it seems like it is infinite.
Before we get too far into it, I do want to thank the person that requested this movie. This is our last movie for this year's Listener Request Month. No kidding. Thank you to everyone that's submitted requests. We've got a lot of good suggestions. This one comes from Matt McGinty on Twitter. Thanks, Matt. We appreciate that. The suggestions, this is a good one. I saw this after seeing the second one. The second one was more fun, in my opinion. This one's good, but there's several parts of it where I'm like, I can't really see what's going on, and that's frustrating.
I don't think you're remembering this movie correctly.
Am I not?
I don't think so.
Maybe I'm just remembering, like, a couple specific scenes.
Good.
I don't know.
You have to have a successful first movie before you can have that satisfying sequel.
That's true, but I just remember Hammer Girl and Bat Boy from the second one, and
Hammer
it's really
Girl
fun.
Bat Boy
are
sweet. They're freaking great. But I think that there is something special about the way that this movie just came out of nowhere and awed people with what it did martial arts-wise. Like, there are definitely moments in this movie that I saw and would, like, I would either, like, wince away from, like, the damage being done or just be awed by the martial arts on display. It's really special.
Has scenes that I most definitely paused, backed up, and watched completely again just because I was just, like, my jaw was on the floor.
What was the movie with the guy with the hammer and the long hallway and elevator? Is that
Old
Sonny
Boy?
Old Boy.
Old Boy.
I think that was Sonny Boy.
Yeah. Man.
Also a very rough movie.
I haven't seen that. I want to.
Rough in a very different way.
I mean, it can be both.
Should we watch the Josh Brolin version of that movie?
No, we should not. Well, we should never watch
Old Boy. All the color out of it.
No, it was already a movie without much color.
I still remember watching Old Boy with Derek for the first time. Mm-hmm. And after that, we both agreed, hey, can we just put on some, like, cartoons?
Yeah.
We watched Avengers after that.
Going back to the raid, I remember why there's my first watching of this movie was tainted with, man, I can't really see what's going on. And it's my own fault. The first time...
Were you like... Did you have bad eye contact?
No.
Were you streaming it from a shitty pirated website?
ding, ding, ding. One. Yeah, that there was that
been
one.
Been there, done that.
It was, I think it was like 480p the entire time. So
almost as good as the one that we did with the, what was it?
Your freaking kangaroo movie.
Fucking 480p is a lot better than what we saw in the
potato ass quality.
Was it visibly from like the camcorder stuffed in the sleeve?
It was not that bad, but it was a bad bootleg.
Did anybody stand up in front of the screen during the film?
I thought that was just part of the movie. No.
Directorial choice.
It'll be interesting watching this in the way that it was intended to be watched, at least.
Yeah, I'm sure it will be.
I'm sure I'll have a good time with it. I assume all of you guys have seen this already.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Well, before we hem and haw too long, let's go ahead and go watch it. Before we do, Rick, what's your most recent – have you released a new chapter of Escape from Persephone 4?
Not in a few days because I really need to get on that, but very soon it will be complete.
But by the time this episode goes up, there will be a brand new chapter.
Yeah.
I'm making that promise for you, Rick.
Only one person has picked it up since we started talking about it on the podcast, so I'm not that worried about it.
Was that shirt a gift?
No, why?
It feels like a gift. Not in a bad way. It just feels like the kind of shirt someone would buy for someone else.
It was a holiday shirt. I bought it specifically because I went to Hawaii for my honeymoon.
You know what you could buy for someone else? My book! It's called Fake Spot. That's the one.
It's available on Amazon. You know what you could buy for yourself? Our Patreon! For as little as $1 a month, you can get all sorts of bonus content, including first impressions and some additional listener requests. That's patreon.com/opinionated. This shirt was purchased for Hawaii because I was going there on my honeymoon, and I wanted to have something that I could wear in a formal setting that wasn't actual formal wear, and apparently just... Even the 3-star restaurants over there are like, yeah, nice button-down Hawaiian shirt's cool. And so I was like, dude, I'm taking advantage of that. Guys, we'll be back in just a minute after we're finished watching The Raid.
Sudah mendengar kalau kita kedatangan tamu tadi undang. Selamat bekerja.
Dan jangan lupa bersenang-senang.
You doing the crab to your friends on the weekend? It's kind of like Rick going on one of his fleshlight camping parties or whatever it is.
Yes, one of the many.
I think mine's a little bit more.
With your dad? You and your dad and the liquor and the fleshlight?
He was naked on that trip.
He was.
Along with a lot of other
people. That's true.
Way more different.
And they passed around a fleshlight.
That was not a trip that happened. These are three different things, one of which is not true at all.
It is a regular weekend. The liquor. The liquor was left out.
Yeah. Makes it hard to come.
Got to keep my dicky stiffy for this pocket pussy.
I can think of a few things I want less than to fuck a pocket pussy that has recently been fucked by someone else.
What if it's your dad?
I can think of a lot of
things. That is even worse on several levels.
You can't think of a lot of things you would like worse than fucking a recently used pocket pussy.
I'd rather do that.
You want to be covered in fire ants less I'd than rather... pocket pussy?
I mean, it could... Instead of being a normal pocket pussy, it could be one full of spikes.
You go for which one?
If I have to, like, come in that thing, like, if you just have to put your penis in it.
No, you got it to completion.
If I got to really get it in there and finish, I'm just going to deal with the fire ants and get bit.
No!
You're not getting bit a couple times, covered in
ants.
Are you talking like someone pours a bucket over my
Yes!
Or what?
You're being a tank of fire.
It's the ALS ice bucket challenge, except it's the ALS fire ant challenge.
I was just going to say that there's a nest of fire ants inside of the pocket pussy.
No.
You get, wait, no. Rick, which one you?
You can have the cum one, or you can have the fire ants pocket.
And remember, this is the one that you've just received from your father. So would you rather it be filled with cum from your father or fire ants?
From your father.
From your father.
I mean, I would personally prefer my dad's cum over a stranger's cum.
Same. Also over a bunch of fire ants.
No. I would prefer.
I know my dad doesn't have anything wrong with his cum. May God rest his soul.
That's fair.
Oh, wow, we are off to a great start.
So this movie's about family.
Family. I'll start off by saying that I got the title to this movie wrong. It's not just The Raid, it's The Raid Redemption, which makes no sense.
Because it's the first movie. I hate when they put
subtitles in the first movie.
Especially ones that start with R, because that's most definitely what you do in subsequent films.
Right, yeah.
The Matrix has taught me that, if nothing else.
Yes. I also stand by my original point of it being hard to see in this movie. Granted, it's much easier to see several of the scenes when they're in standard definition and not, like, 480p.
Well, Rich TV has a really bright backlight for some reason. Like, I normally... His TV versus other TVs I've seen, it's really hard to see blacks on. I don't know why.
What do you mean by it's hard to see?
There are several scenes where it is dark intentionally, and then, like, oh, they do this really cool thing where, like, the bad guys can identify the cops because they see, like, a muzzle flash and backlights the cops, and, oh, that's really neat. There are also some scenes where it's just there's some action taking place, and it's very, very dimly lit, and it's hard to see. And all of our characters, all of our good guy characters are dressed in black, so it's still hard to see what's going
on.
Which
was worse, this film or Batman?
This film.
Batman.
Easy. No.
Definitely Batman.
No, I don't know what you're talking about, Batman? To be honest. Like, there's not a scene in this movie where there's fighting going on where I have trouble seeing what the action is happening. Like,
I didn't say the fighting. It's when they're doing all the tension buildup in the...
Like the stuff where it's intentionally, like,
hard to
blocked
see.
Out.
So how does it be hard to see?
Yeah. But there's a huge difference between I can't see what's happening in this fight scene and I can't see in this scene where it is intended to be tense because you can't see everything that's happening.
I can't see what's happening in this fight scene, but it's not one of the martial arts fight scenes. It's when everybody's like just firing guns back and forth at each other.
I'm just thinking of The Staircase. The staircase was really dark, but it's also nothing but plain concrete and people in uniforms. It's obvious where they are in an otherwise... seemingly black abyss.
The first half
of that scene, your wife was still in the kitchen cooking, and so if you've got like a smidge of screen glare on there, you can't see what's going on. Yeah. Granted, once you turn the lights off, it's like, oh, I can clearly see what's happening now. But most of us are going to be watching a movie in a situation where there's at least a little bit of glare, unless we're watching it very late at night or in a theater.
I mean, even then, it may be that I've seen this movie enough times to be like, okay, I know what's happening in the scene. But, like, the only time that I can think of where it gets excessively dark is when they do that shot where they've got everyone hiding on one side of the stairwell and it, like, pans out into this to the, like, middle of the area and then pans up past, like, to the floor above them to show, okay, they're in a very bad position strategically.
I think they do one more really dark scene, but I can't remember where it was.
I'll also say just like dark and as in like it's a heavy movie.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
like,
it is a very
especially light. Having seen the second one first, there's a lot more of like in the second Raid movie, there's a lot more of super gruesome action that also still has like a comedic element to it.
Yeah.
Like when there's a dude killing people with a baseball and a baseball bat.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
It's dark and very violent.
It feels more like a comic book.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. And in this one, it's just very gruesome a lot of the time. There's a lot of scenes where it's like, wow, that was choreographed really, really well. The action executed by the performers is super impressive.
Yeah.
It looks very visceral. And, like, I'm cringing at the violence and, like, almost turning away just because of how, like, gruesome a lot of it is. And it doesn't have the same, like, fun element that the second movie has to it.
The incredibly impressive thing to me about this movie is how – like heavily choreographed it had to have been, but also without feeling very choreographed. Like, it's easy when you're doing this level of martial arts for something to come off as like Power Ranger-y, where, right. you know,
it, everyone's a like, telegraph kick where people have already gotten out of the way.
Yeah, right. exactly.
And they're like twisting in the midair for no apparent reason.
Right,
just
yeah.
because they can.
Mm-hmm. And the bug lady comes out from behind us.
It just, there. It is really easy for a movie that has a lot of very clearly martial arts style action to feel like it was something put together for actors to do. And it can look beautiful or it can look interesting, but it's very difficult to do what this movie does, which is make it feel real and make it feel mm-hmm. impactful with every hit. Like, there are blocks in this movie that feel more impactful than actual hits yeah. in other movies.
Because they're actually willing to hurt each other in the
yeah. the way that Paul, my friend Paul, introduced this movie to me when we originally talked about it is, it's the kind of movie you can only make with a dangerous disregard for the safety of your stuntmen.
yeah.
There's a reason this wasn't made in America.
By stuntmen, you mean actors.
Yeah.
Just your regular.
Right.
yeah, exactly.
But still, tell the story you told me about. So there's a scene when they're in the hallway fighting a bunch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And this is after our main character, what's his name?
Rama.
Has, like, he's kind of one man showing it at this mm-hmm. point, because yeah. most of his squad is dead.
Right. He runs down a hall, grabs a guy, and keeps running until he gets out to the center of this apartment complex, which is this big open square area.
Yeah.
And he yeets the guy across the entire
thing. It's like the stairwell.
Yeah.
Except not. But
the guy
yeah.
falls down a floor or two and then lands on his back on like the railing of the thing, and you can like
and it's a very
and
crunchy
him.
Landing.
Yeah,
he wraps around the railing.
Exactly.
He becomes one of those weird bridges.
yeah.
Becomes a slap band. You guys ever have those slap bands where you just like yeah. swack, yeah. hit them on your yeah. wrist yeah. and they wrap
exactly.
up? Yeah, he becomes one of those to the rail.
It's this incredible scene, and from what I've heard, I haven't ever like looked this up to see if it's true, but what I've heard is that originally when they did this, the guy missed, fell the rest of the way down the stairs and went to the hospital. And then when he got out, they came back and did this scene again to get it right. And
did they not have something down there to catch him and the inevitable possibility that he would fall?
I mean, maybe he did, and that's how like they were able to still do it. And still, like,
that's how he lived.
Like,
yeah.
yeah, like, they're, I don't know what they did, but, like, you know, that's
really
the story that I've heard.
Enough.
They got a couple pillows off of some of the beds and just piled
yeah,
them
yeah.
up. Yeah.
They had another guy stand down there to catch him.
They collected a whole bunch of their Kroger bags into one large bag, and they kind of put it there at the bottom to break the fall.
They had the tiny guy catch him in midair and, like, slam him, so it would only be, like, half
the No, they had the tiny guy catch him in midair and just punch him upwards a whole bunch to
yeah.
slow his fall.
That tiny dude, the Mad Dog is what he's mm-hmm. called in this movie. He just leaves such an impression.
Oh, yeah.
Like, to anyone who watches this movie, like, there's a lot of things that people will remember, but I love that everyone always remembers the tiny, badass motherfucker that's in this movie.
And I'll say, because the first fight, it feels almost a little cliche in the, like, no, I'm not going to use my weapon against you. We're going to go mano a mano.
When he puts down, like, he's got the guy dead to rights with the gun.
Yeah.
And he's got
the police
yeah.
captain dead to rights with the gun, but instead he motions for the police captain to put his weapon down, yeah. and then Mad Dog puts his own weapon down so they can fight hand to hand.
Yeah, even, like, goes so far as to take the bullets out of the gun and even the one that's in the
exactly.
In the
so, he all but says he wants to see the lights go out of his eyes.
Basically, yeah.
yeah.
He says
yeah.
the gun is like ordering takeout. Is you just don't get the same rush. And
yeah.
It's like, damn, dude.
Which is badass, but it's also very, like, I've seen the, like, we're going to put our guns aside and fight like men. Mm-hmm. Like, I've seen that scene before. It's the second fight scene that makes him as a character as a whole stand out.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where, like,
where he goes full honey badger.
He's taking insane amounts of punishment, and it's not like, oh, he's still just mustering up the strength. Like, he's not slowing down.
Yeah,
right.
At 100 the whole time.
You can see him getting sweatier. You can see that he is getting tired just from the way that he's
when he gets a light bulb shoved into his neck,
yeah.
you can
it
see
gives
him bleed
more oxygen to his lungs.
You can see him bleeding profusely.
Uh-huh. And
yet he does not slow down.
My blood will reduce the friction of my punches.
I'm lighter now. Right.
You can't grab me because of how greasy I am.
He does look. Everyone in this movie looks greasy as fuck, man. It's insane.
But it's that second fight that puts the nail in the coffin for what this character is.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it sheds the previous fight in a different light because it's not just some, like,
one-off
it's not some American army dude who's, like, full of his own machismo. this guy's actually that badass and dangerous.
He lives, it's a tiny Indonesian man who's so full of his
He looks like he weighs about 90 pounds.
He does.
And he gets his ass thrown across the room probably 15 different times.
I love that, too. I love that, too. In the fights with Mad Dog, it's not – it doesn't paint them all as, like, equals, right?
Because
when he's fighting the police captain – you can see that the police captain's got like 70 pounds on him.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you can see it in the way that they fight because Mad Dog is getting him with the rapid strikes and he's all over him.
And he's also using his momentum against him.
Yeah.
True.
It's like flinging him over his shoulder and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. But then you also get the scenes where Mad Dog is like, he's just been kicked in the throat and he just grabs Mad Dog's foot and swings him around to face plant him into the wall.
As a short guy, I appreciate that they do a lot of stuff to like emphasize this guy's tiny, but also don't like make him not as incredibly badass as this actual person must be to pull off these like moves.
Right.
He's an incredible martial artist. Like everyone who has significance in this movie is clearly an incredible martial artist, but he just stands out among the pack.
What do you think of Rama?
I love every fight scene that he's in, and that's good because he's in most of them.
Well, let's start with Rama's character. We see him in the very beginning, and this is the majority of where we get our portrait of who this character is, besides for the power of brotherhood.
Right.
He's very much a caricature of the good cop.
Yeah. I mean,
wife to go home to, kid on the way. Like, he hits all the checklists.
Yeah, like
2 days before retirement. Not quite that one.
He looks like he's like 2 days from like getting in.
From being high. Yeah. Well, they
call a rookie, right?
Yeah, they even call him a rookie at multiple points.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I actually really like him. And I think in a movie like this, where you're not going to spend much time on characterization, you really want someone who is that archetypal of like, you don't need a lot from him. You just need the basic idea of he's the good guy. You've got his brother
because
who
being
is
good is good.
Yeah, his brother who is on the wrong side of the tracks, and then you've got the like horrifying, gross, disgusting landlord and his trained monster attack dog.
He's a little like cliche for me at first.
Cliche, yeah.
I would a little big. Give him a little taste of something. Give him like a weird snack that he likes. Just give me something to bite onto.
You know what he's got? He's got incredible martial arts skills.
Yeah.
Well, I will say that like he takes some serious damage in the first half of the film.
Yeah.
And he's limping, and that's when his brother comes to his aid.
Yeah.
But it just seems like he ate a donut or something like that, and he's pretty much back
cop powers activated.
It's that BN24 thing.
And I suppose the nature of this movie is just like the reason we're here is to see lots of martial arts fights.
Yeah.
And so you have to suspend reality to some extent in order to keep the momentum going. Yeah.
I think part of it is that like he never takes like serious damage in terms of like he never gets like stabbed or something.
Right.
And that helps me sustain
his slowly sliced across the cheek.
Yeah, but that's not going to slow you down at all in a fight.
Well, they do demonstrate how he's slowly taking off his uniform.
Yeah.
When he first comes in, he's got the helmet. He has a bulletproof vest.
Yeah.
And the helmet disappears just because he does one of those like cartwheels through midair and it just comes off.
Yeah.
Like, come on, dude. Figure out your straps.
He's a rookie.
But meanwhile, later, he gets hit with a machete right in his back, and it's perfectly obvious that if it wasn't for that vest, he would have been fucked up.
Incredibly. And, like, I like that as an idea of him slowly shedding those layers. Like
right.
That,
but
that
then he takes the vest off for reasons that aren't particularly clear.
No.
I put it together was he got a bunch of tiny little bits of glass in it after falling several stories and going through two windows. I don't know why he didn't just shake it out and put it back on.
I'm thinking it's either that or maybe there's, like, ceramic plates in there and that's what it's using to stop the bullets. And so maybe, like, that's what, like, he is.
Shattered ceramic plates are bigger than flesh.
But if it's, like, stuck in there, like, it's not going to provide protection and maybe it's, like, poking into him. They needed to make it much clearer why he rolls out of a window after falling on top of a dude and is like, my jacket, I gotta get it off.
It feels too heavy now.
Yeah, exactly.
The reality is that martial arts are more difficult with this on.
I mean, that's probably a big part of it. Although it's not slowing him down in that first hallway fight. good lord, that first hallway fight really sets the tone for the rest of the movie.
He makes like, a billy stick feel really good.
He does. Like, he's got that billy stick and knife combo, and he is making it work in a way that I would not have expected. Yeah.
At the same time, those henchmen put in some serious work. Like, they look like they're going to go down easy.
That's a huge part of this. What makes this movie work is that no one in this movie feels like they are not in a life or death situation where they are trying their best to kill these people. Like,
right. This apartment building is full of people that apparently all of them have at least a level one black belt.
Yeah, exactly. And it really helps sell it that, like, what the level of danger is, why this level of brutality is needed, because they're doing everything they can to kill these people as fast as they can, because there's another guy right behind him that is actively going to try to murder you with a giant-ass machete.
Because like, they all have machetes. It's like, it's a gift when you show up to the building.
Exactly, it's a housewarming gift.
Yeah.
I like that the movie kind of sets itself up in, like, there's multiple bad guys, right?
Yeah.
Because there's also a ton of henchmen throughout it, but you've got Mad Dog, you've got Machete Guy,
you got Andy,
who's a good bad guy,
right. Yeah. And that's Rama's brother,
right? And you've got the like crime lord at the head of it all. That's really, honestly, one of the more disappointing parts is the way that he ends up going out.
He
had such a strong introduction when, like, he's killing those five guys and he runs out of bullets and, like, casually walks over. And there's obviously another bullet in there that he could use, but instead he picks up the hammer.
Yeah, he wants to mix up his Tuesday.
Yeah, exactly. Like, they give him such a strong bit of characterization there. And through the rest of the movie, he's just a monstrous scumbag the entire time.
Well, he's... I'd say that the beginning is the part where he's the most monstrous scumbag. Throughout the rest of it, he's just kind of, he's like dictating to everybody else in the building, like, hey, take care of this problem
but like,
for me.
He's like stabbing Andy in his hand and be like, I saw you and this other guy in there. I know you're bad. I want you to be killed in front of him, like that whole thing.
That doesn't even strike me as like, man, what a monster. That strikes me as like, any dude who's a bad guy, if they see their right-hand man like
betraying
them, that's standard like... That's handling this 101, right?
Sure, but okay. At least he fucked him in front of his brother.
Yeah, that would have been scummy.
Yeah, no, but the reason I'm saying this is because I agree with you. I agree that the way that his character is handled after that initial opening scene is pretty lackluster because he's set up as just a guy who is gruesome and who enjoys violence for the sake of violence and who's very much running the show in this building. And then from then on. You see him sick his lackeys on people, but he doesn't actually do anything, and then he gets captured by who I would argue is one of the lamest characters in the movie.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's the problem.
He definitely should not be the person who winds up being the real bad guy underneath it all. The whole time he seems like someone who...
You're talking about the police commander in the polo shirt.
The white-haired cop who winds up being dirty. It seems like there's going to be a scene maybe three-quarters of the way through where he winds up getting a bullet in the head. And it turns out, like, no, he actually is one of the most important characters in the climax of the film.
And manages to actually survive the entire thing. I was spending the entire movie trying to figure out how he died. And it's so frustrating to me that this guy is the reason for every single thing that happens.
For people that haven't seen it, set up who this guy is and what he did.
So there is a guy who is basically in charge of this unit, and he sent them all in here to take this crime lord down, this guy who's running this apartment complex, essentially.
And he stands out visually from everyone else because he's wearing, like, a white polo shirt.
Yeah,
he's an old gray-haired dude.
Yeah.
It's clear that he's not one of the,
He came in on his day off or something.
Yeah, he's not one of the SWAT team cops like everybody else.
Right.
And despite the fact that in the beginning we see the SWAT van coming in and the captain is giving the speech to all of his soldiers.
Yeah.
This guy is conspicuously he shows up at the scene.
My thought has always been that he was doing some kind of undercover thing, and then when they got clear close, he threw on the vest to get in to get there with him.
Yeah.
But the important thing is he is actually a corrupt cop. This entire operation is not one that was set up, you know, the way that you normally... Yeah, it would not be done normally. And he is doing this all to kill the crime lord at the top of this thing because that he's dirty and this guy is basically...
And basically a rival crime lord or...
Paid him to do it.
Paid him off.
Yeah.
Supposedly.
Something like that.
Well, and the reason that becomes a big issue for everybody is because he's set up this SWAT team essentially to come in and handle this, but he hasn't alerted any of the official police force about this. There's no way to call for backup when things go south.
And things go real south.
Real fast.
There's this really incredible scene where the SWAT team has invaded, and they're impressively stealth for being cops. They come in like they are ninjas.
Yeah, that first opening where they're showing them like going through really helps sell that these guys are competent, and that's important for what comes next.
Right. Even though it's been repeated over and over again that they're mostly rookies.
Right.
But anyway, things go to shit. And there's this moment where the mob boss, you hear him over the PA system, basically mobilizing every single person in this 15-story building that, like, whoever brings me their heads essentially gets to stay here for the rest of their lives for free. And all hell breaks loose for the entire rest of the movie.
And this place is so great. I can tell why these guys are fighting so hard to live here for free.
All that good whatever drug they're selling. I couldn't tell you what drug that is.
I mean, who knows? Like maybe cocaine. Heroin or cocaine? Yeah, who knows?
White well, stuff. That is interesting to me. I don't think it necessarily adds anything to the movie, but the idea that a lot of these henchmen are just people who are...
Wanting free rent.
Yeah. Where it's...
I wouldn't say henchmen. They're criminals that live in this shitty apartment.
Well, but not all of them are criminals, because we clearly
one
see...
One is not a criminal.
Yeah, one
couple is not a criminal.
Right, but that at least implies that not everybody... So, right. There's also several kids in this apartment building.
Who are... Lookouts.
Like, yeah, they are like...
Yeah.
They are the rookie drug guys of their group.
I'd still say it's at least more interesting than just, like, it's a building full of bad guys.
Right. No, yeah, right. I agree with that. Like, having that one couple does help sell that this is something that is happening in just... And there's also, like, other, like, just random drug addicts.
Well, yeah, there's people that... It's
people
clear,
that just lock their doors.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's clear, because it's like you said, that at one point when he breaks through the window and he takes off his vest because it's all filled with glass... And he runs past two people who are very high.
Yeah.
And then the chick on the ground's like, what was that? And the dude's just staring off into space and doesn't even answer yet.
Or the beginning of the movie where they like zip tie a guy down who is like got his pants full of shit.
Yeah.
They like take time to like show you very obviously the brown, like wet looking stains on his ass.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Now, this movie has a problem kind of similar to Overlord in that. Here we have all these people that are essentially soldiers.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And we're introduced to them when they're all wearing the exact same uniform and they're all wearing helmets.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't be that big of a deal because they keep the cast of important characters to be relatively short.
I was going to say they
the
wave
captain,
that down quick.
There's Rama, and then
there are
the part where it kind of meanders a little bit for me and gets a bit off track is roughly around the middle of the film, there's this buddy of his who winds up taking a hit and... For probably, the next 20 minutes, our main character's sole objective is to take care of his friend, except for we haven't really had an opportunity to understand why this guy is so important to him, except for, like, this is my last brother, I'm not going to leave him.
No, we know who that guy is, because there's the three people that we know. There's Rama, the main character, there's the captain, and this isn't the commander dude in the polo shirt. This is another one of the good captain of the SWAT team. And then there's the sergeant, who is the darker complexioned guy who, when Rama was in the van asking questions about, like, hey, why are we doing this raid today? The sergeant is the one who fired back at him, like, because why not today?
Because it's our fucking job.
Yeah, like, just shut up and do your job, rookie.
And that's the guy that gets shot?
That's the guy that gets shot in the ear. And I don't think it's like, oh, this is his best buddy from college, and he's just got to save him. I think it's just like...
This guy's still alive.
Yeah, one of my brothers in arms is still alive, but is wounded. I got to take care of him.
Right. And I do like how they do a good job in that scene in the hallway that we were talking about earlier, because this is the one where that guy's still on the ground. I like how that guy is like trying to crawl up to help and that dude grabs him and like just to sell the violence, this guy whips out
our sergeant
sergeant, and he's like, this guy's gut shot, he's had his ear blown off, and he is just like going to town with
like
this
it's
guy.
Not like 5-6 stabs and then he just keeps crawling.
Exactly,
which is a great segue into talk about some of the finishers in this movie, because there's a couple that said one of the ones that stands out to me is the
start in that hallway
is the repeated head smacks against the wall as he's sliding down.
That one's in the preview, and that was probably the reason that saw this movie for the first time.
So
I was like, holy shit, I have never seen anything like that. I need to watch this. I don't
there's
care
the
where it's from.
Reverse Superman suplex door finisher.
Okay, so like this one needs setup. So at one point in this fight, a guy gets thrown through a door, but it only takes off the top like 80% of it. The bottom jagged half is like still there.
The last hinge is still attached exactly. with its wood.
Exactly. There's maybe like 6-8 inches of like jagged wood sticking out. Rama grabs a guy by the head, like holds him by the back, leaps backwards so they're both like strung out like flat, and drives this guy's neck onto those 8 inches of wood. And it is
like, I never break eye contact.
Yes.
Like, what? Watches why would you life. Watch the life leave from a guy's eyes you just murdered when you're supposed to be good at the guy?
I want
yeah,
you,
but he's done it.
I want you to imagine that finisher as a move, and then as he's holding the dude's head, he's just, rest now. You are at peace. Like,
yes. How many guys did he beat up and throw behind him and never look back?
Yeah, but there's like immediate guys coming after him in most of those moments.
Well, and a lot of the times, the guys that he beats up, throws behind him and never looks back, they get up and come at him again, and he has to spin around and deal with them.
Yeah.
I'm thinking specifically in, there's the fight with Machete Guy, mm-hmm. who's one, you know, we said there's a couple like mini bosses yeah. in this movie. There's mm-hmm. Mad Dog, and then there's this guy who's just got the creepiest bug eyes and yeah. a big machete. And
okay, so another finisher that I want to talk about. There is the one where the guy that we talked about earlier with the guy getting thrown across the
sure,
stairwell.
Yeah, sure.
There's also one of my favorite things that I always forget is in this movie where Rama puts a propane tank inside an empty refrigerator.
Oh my gosh.
And then shoves it against the door and throws a grenade of some kind in there with it. And the entire thing explodes like it's a giant pack of C4.
The front of it explodes yeah. because they make like a explosion cone with that invincible refrigerator.
Yeah. Well, and I'd have an issue with it because it's dumb.
It is.
Except,
kind of dumb.
Except.
Haven't you seen one of the more recent Indiana Jones movies?
You know,
where he winds up surviving like a nuclear
bomb. That's stupid. That's stupid. Except that the refrigerator also gets blasted backwards
right.
and does significant damage to the room that they're trying to bunker in.
Yeah, yeah.
If they had been able to like put that in there and just like hold it there and it fires out like a flaming propane cannon out the
yeah.
front, I'd be like, that's really dumb.
What part in training covers propane plus grenade freezer bomb?
I think the part where it's like, all right, men, you're going to be in martial arts death battles after all of your squad is dead, so be sure to, you know, use your environment wisely.
And yet they don't. They walk by so many chairs, and I only see one get thrown and smashed into somebody like one time.
Yeah,
some of them are made out of metal, and you could easily impale a motherfucker, and nobody does it.
That's
well,
true,
yeah, I mean,
true.
You know Jackie Chan. Like, chairs and laggers are in China.
That's true. Jackie Chan gets a lot of mileage
machetes
out of those
are
props.
In Indonesia.
Well, chairs and ladders are primarily for parkouring over as you're beating people up with your
yeah.
fists.
The amount of knives and machetes that Rama goes up against and doesn't like and
just leaves them on
to,
the ground.
That and but like he also believably manages to get out of most of these things without any real dangerous injuries from those knives. Like it's ridiculous that he would. And but like in the moment when you're watching the scene, it feels like, okay, yeah, that block feels real. It makes sense that you got away from that. But damn, you should be torn to ribbons by fighting this
well,
many guys.
They do demonstrate
knives.
When they are hiding in the wall, a bit of the Anne Frank style, then the machete comes through and it cuts,
oh, that's such a
cuts his face. And I like how they demonstrated that like one of the ways that he protected himself when the machete was on its way out is that like their gloves seem like they have chainmail basically woven into them.
Some kind
and
of
he protected
yeah.
himself when he was on its way out.
Yeah,
I thought that was to keep the blood
right,
from
right,
coming
blood.
Out with
I think
him
it's
so
that
he
too,
won't
yeah.
see it.
Oh, maybe that's what it was.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I think that too.
I hated that scene.
It's the most
it's very it's very well done and like the amount of self-control that he and the guy he's protecting are having to go through is just impressive.
Yeah.
And when the machete gets stabbed through the wall and it cuts Rama and you can see it embedded in his cheek.
Yeah. And the guy
very,
leaves it there.
It's so, I don't know.
Okay.
It's so uncomfortable. Because there's a lot of violence in this that's like cool, but like, I've got no frame of reference.
No,
I can't
like
compare it.
With some fluorescent light tubing.
And have it dragged across my larynx?
Yeah.
No. But I've cut myself before.
Right.
And I know how painful it is. And the imagining not only leaving it there, but also the slow drawing it back out. Because you know it. Because you also, you know that
yeah.
as it's being drawn back out, it's also doing like, where it's like, barely making the cut a little bit deeper
yeah,
too,
yeah.
And it, for whatever reason, this to me is the most like visceral part of it.
Yeah.
That I just have to like, oh, I gotta like look away
there's,
for a minute.
There's a couple of like knees to the head and like head blows that I feel that way about. But yeah, I definitely get where you're coming from with that. Like there's, it's just something about it is very relatable pain in a way that most is not.
I also really like the way the way the story is set up, where they're working their way up this building in these thin halls, lends itself to, okay, we've got this big group of bad guys, but realistically, we can only fight them one, maybe two at a time without getting in each other's way. And it does that in a way that's very believable and very not, because, I mean, we all know, like, we've seen plenty of stuff where, like, oh, it's the good guy's surrounded and they're just going to slowly take turns so that they don't inconvenience him too much.
Right. So they don't stab each other with their machetes.
In this movie, it works. Yeah, in this movie, it works really well. And it genuinely, like, he'll be punching a dude and some guy's coming up right behind him to try and, like, take advantage of the fact that he's busy.
Yeah.
But he can, it's still limited to one or two, and it works really well in just the setting that they've got.
Yeah.
I like it.
It's weird to me that how they can be so much better at choreography than most Hollywood studios.
Yeah, I mean,
choreography is usually pretty expensive.
Well, it's not that.
Time-consuming.
Usually, movies I think don't want to be as brutal and with the impacts as this movie is. I'm guessing that like this movie is definitely a hard R-rated movie. I think that there's probably some level of violence at which the MPAA is just like, no, you're now PG-13.
Well, there's ways of getting around that, which is just like, don't do all the fake blood. But I think there's a few things. It's that all this choreography is time-consuming, not only to train the people doing it, but to film. Because if you screw up your choreography,
you got
to
do it again.
You got to do it again until you get it right.
Yeah.
It also takes skilled actors. You can't just throw in a bunch of random extras. You have to have extras who've got some martial arts experience, which usually means it's going to cost a little bit more as well. So,
which is also one of the reasons that I think it helps that this movie has such archetypal characters, because you don't have to have like incredible acting talent. And I'm not saying that the guys who are in this movie are bad actors. I'm just saying I think that would probably help things of, like, you don't have to concentrate as much in that area.
Also, you probably don't need that many, because they very well could have just had all the bad guys. The bad guys from Hallway Fight A.
Yeah.
Get a different shirt on. All right, now you're the bad guys for Hallway Fight B.
Exactly.
And they're all greasy and grimy, and so they kind of blend in together.
Put on some sunglasses and a dreadlocks wig, and you're good.
Exactly. So, like, maybe they didn't need as many, but, I mean, it's still super impressive.
Yeah, absolutely.
How do you guys feel about the brother, Andy?
I like him.
I wish that we got more of him.
Yeah.
I think that, like, he needed a... I think he needed a fight scene of his own that was more than him stabbing those two guys in the elevator. Because that really
Why did
sell.
He stab the guys in the elevator?
Because he wouldn't get caught.
He was going to meet up with his brother, yeah.
Yeah, he saw his brother on the CCTV screens, and so he was going to go try to help him get out of there.
Okay.
But I wanted him to have a, like, single fight scene of his own where he can do a lot. Because his fight with him and Rama and Mad Dog is amazing. It's the fight of this movie.
Yes, absolutely.
But I wanted him to have a moment of his own where he can show off his own skills against someone who is kind of his equal. But you really can't have that because all of their opponents are cops. And if he kills a cop, he is now sort of much further on the, like, dark end of this movie.
Yeah.
Our main character is such a good guy that he would then have to take his brother down too.
Something like that.
Well, he's a paladin.
Right.
And also, like, the end of the movie sets him up to, because he and Rama talk, and Rama's like, yeah, why don't you come with me? Yeah. And his brother says, you know, the same reason you wouldn't take your cop uniform off. Like, this is what fits me. And it sets him up to, he starts walking back, he's got this big old grin on, and it's kind of feels like he's going back to take over the operation where the head bad guy was just taken out, right?
Right.
If that's the case, I want to see him also be more competent when he's upstairs, because he's supposed to be, I forget what our sleazy drug lord bad guys. Yeah. I forget what his name is, but Andy is supposed to be that guy's right-hand man along with Mad Dog, right? But they specifically say that Mad Dog is like the super violent one and Andy is more like in the books kind of thing, but he'll also be, you know, he'll pull the trigger if he needs to. So don't fuck around with him. Right. But we don't see any of that. We only really see him, like, show up and whine a couple times, and then sleazy drug lord landlord catches him in a lie and stabs him. And so it doesn't seem like he's competent going back into that world.
Also, the reason he got caught was the same reason that he spotted his brother was there in the first place.
Like,
use your noodle, my man.
Yeah. I'm guessing that he assumed that, like, there wasn't a camera in that hall or something. But yeah, you're right.
It's not something I assume.
Right, that's a very good point. But yeah, I see where you're coming from. I think that for me, I'm willing to like, I like him and his brother working together enough that I'm willing to give it a lot more of a pass than I normally probably would. But you are right that it does not do a great job of selling his character.
Are we doing two of this?
Two?
No, we're just doing this one.
I mean, we can do the Raid 2 at some point, but yeah.
Sure, but for listener request month, right? Yeah, we're just doing
this. We can do a foreign movie month and do
Raid 2. It's just so wasteful with the brother.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. I remember that. Because
the start of the next movie starts with... Hey,
dying. Yeah.
We caught you.
Yeah.
Bang. it's a rival like gang leader. And he's like,
yeah.
Well, we caught you, Andy. You're bad.
Yeah.
Bang. Into the open grave you fall and we cover you up.
And that's what gets Rama on the warpath again.
Yeah.
Hint
second film.
I wonder if they just couldn't like get the actor back for some reason or something like that.
They couldn't come up with a good reason for him not to do another raid.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not doing that anymore.
Right, yeah.
You guys trying to fuck me in that way.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah.
It's a tough movie. It's a tough movie to have, like, at-length discussions about because genuinely, like, 60% of... Well, not only that, but 60% of the movie is fights.
Yeah.
And it's like... You know, how long can we say, man, the fight was really cool?
A big martial arts choreography podcast, I could try that, right, but I don't know that stuff.
We could maybe, like, break down, like, the Salat moves that they use in this and explain, like, how it all fits together and all that bullshit, but, like, there's just not really a good way to do that.
Are there any films that you can think of that have quite this much violence in them?
The Raid 2. not really. Like, and I think it's the impactful level of the violence. Like, there's another...
Also just the sheer volume of it. Like, mm-hmm. I'm trying to think of 300 back in the day is dwarfed by this. Same thing with any of the Die Hard movies.
There's another movie with Rama's actor in it.
I was about to say,
was like the Night
actor?
Comes for Us or something like that. I'm gonna look it up. But
I can't remember. Was that... The same studio, too, or just the actor?
I think it was the same actor. It may have been, like, the same, like, group as far as, like, the stunts and everything or something like that. I don't know.
I want to say there was a pretty fair amount of fucking in there.
Our martial arts troupe is also very polyamorous.
Yeah, the name of the movie is The Night Comes for Us. And in some ways, it is... almost like more violent than this movie
is.
Wow. The captain in this movie, the guy that's the good guy, he is a much bigger part of that movie. And like, it's like this movie, if they were much more willing to do like actual, like super harm to people, like stab people. And then those people just keep getting back up and going up and going at it again.
Oh my,
like it's insane. It does not feel as grounded as this movie, but it is just so violent.
But despite it being violent, it doesn't feel like exploitative violent either. Because I've seen some movies where it's like, man, this is just like kind of like the later Saw movies where it's like
gruesome
sake.
Something porn.
Like gore porn.
Torture porn.
Yeah. Gore porn. Yeah. But this, it feels like in this movie, it's realistic and intentional.
No one gets thrown into, well, like an industrial fan where they explode in blood.
Right.
No one has to, like, dig through their eye for the key just because that's gross and people like gross things.
When they, like, stab that guy on the bottom of that door, they don't, like, pull his head back like a Pez dispenser. Yeah.
Exactly.
And the mad dog inside, I'm like, ha-ha!
He
punches his way out like a chest burster.
Yeah. I could believe this guy is some kind of alien with as strong as he is.
Baki. I don't know if y'all got to...
Are you serious?
Yeah.
A guy gets inside another guy?
There was a army, ex-army Asian, ex-Asian army guy.
How is he ex-Asian?
Well, he's still Asian. He's ex-Asian army.
There's a specific army he is a part of no longer.
He left the army and stopped being Asian?
He's been living in the jungle and apparently mastering god martial arts or some shit. He's also a super
assassin. I mean, it's Baki. That's everybody.
So, basically.
Yeah.
One guy's talking shit about me in an interview. Uh-huh. He sits down on a couch. The dude burst up out of the couch through his asshole and his whole body.
Oh, gosh.
During the interview. I don't know what martial arts that is, but...
Baki is the most insane anime I have ever laid eyes on. Because, like, there's all kinds of anime where you can take, like, a scene out of context and it makes no sense. But you put it in context and, you know, you can kind of follow it. Baki doesn't make any more goddamn sense with context than it does without. Sometimes it makes less sense with context.
Baki is like Asian K-fab personified. You just take it on face value.
Yeah, I guess that's it.
You think Mad Dog fits in Baki?
I think so. Oh, yeah. I think he's low-tier Baki, but I think he would exist.
He's not nearly muscly enough.
No, they're small. Well, they're basically just like you take the whole character and scale them down in Baki. Like, they're still ripped to fucking shit.
And they look like Arnold back in his day, only 4 feet tall.
Every character has, like, 0.01% body fat in Baki, despite their overall stature.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
You're either 3.5 feet tall or 8.
It's true. Oh man. This movie's a lot of fun. I'm going to go first with my final thoughts, and then we'll loop around to Caleb, since this was your pick tonight.
Sounds good.
I really enjoy this movie. There's parts of it that I don't like. There's scenes where it's a little too dark to see what's going on, unless you've got a TV that's really great with the definition of the blacks in the color.
Yeah.
But those scenes are short and not throughout the entire movie, so I'm willing to forgive it pretty quickly on that. Overall, my least favorite scene is not because it's bad, but just because I get squeamish during it. It's when he gets stabbed in the cheek with that machete through the wall. Like, man, that makes me recoil. My favorite scene in this movie is the fight between Mad Dog and the two brothers.
Yeah.
Like, that's just – it's a super cool fight. And it's a very vicious end.
Yeah.
A Mad Dog gets
a fluorescent light bulb
jammed into his throat and then dragged across it. It's very gruesome.
First he fights with that thing in his neck for like a solid minute.
It's a spigot. It's like someone had tapped him for maple syrup.
It's like even with that tube in his neck, he's still like a quarter of a second from finishing off one brother.
Exactly. Like, you could believe – there's no point in this movie where you can, like, go like, oh, yeah, this guy's definitely got this fight won. Like,
not at all. So it's definitely my favorite part of the movie. Overall, it's a ton of fun. It's still something I don't know. It probably is just because I watched the second one first, and so that set the tone for what I expected in raid movies.
Right.
But this isn't one that I'd come back to super often. If I want to watch a raid movie, I'm going to the second one. So for that reason, like, it's still a fun movie, a lot of great action, but I'm going to give it a 4 out of 5 fluorescent neck spigots. It's good though.
I think this is an incredibly brilliantly done movie. And it's not brilliant in the way that a lot of movies are, where like the story's a really strong aspect or that kind of thing. But I think when it comes to portraying action and violence, this movie is as good as it gets. It would be difficult to top this movie in any category that involves fighting. It is just an incredible amount of talent, both physical and from from the people who were filming it. The way they find ways to show these scenes and so effectively show you all the violence that's going on. Because it's not like the type of thing where it's cutting up or it's zoomed in close so you can't see. You see
everything. I love it. Yeah. I love how much of the action you can see almost the entire time. The only bit that I'm not a fan of is there's a couple points towards the end where it gets pretty shaky cam. But that's just me because shaky cam kind of makes me sick.
Sure.
But I love how much of the action you actually get to see.
Oh, it's amazing. And the gravity is just so intense.
Yeah, for sure. And that's what this movie is here for. It's not really here to show you an emotional story. This movie is here to show you an opera of violence, and it really does pull off all of that in an incredible and exceptional way, because there's martial arts movies made all the time.
Yeah.
Not many of them have the, like, everyone has seen this and goes, The Raid, that is the shit.
Well, because you can't talk about any kung fu movies anymore without thinking about the, like, it's just
that's the one that comes to mind.
For 20 years, there weren't movies like this, and out of nowhere, it's like, here's another one that goes in the, like, Hall of Fame, like, amazing movies.
Yeah, here's another question. How many Indonesian films are you familiar with?
Just three.
Two?
Three, I think, counting this one.
I think that speaks volumes.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. But yeah, so I have to say my least favorite part about this movie is probably that the brother does not get a get an action scene to himself where he can really show off what he can do.
I think that would help somewhat. I don't necessarily need action. I just need a scene to justify what he's good at. I don't want someone to tell me what he's good at.
Yeah, he just needs to have a slightly more well-built-out character.
Yeah, something
like that. I'm asking a lot. I just need something.
A little bit. But that is not enough for me to take any points away from this movie, to be honest. Because that's not what this movie's here for. And what this movie is here for, he does his part incredibly well in the best fight scene of the movie. So I'm going to give this 5 out of 5 machete wounds because it's perfect. It does what it wants to do perfectly. This movie is the idealized version of itself, so I can't see any reason to take any points away from it.
What would you call this genre? Because action in martial arts is not enough.
Whew. Maybe like grounded martial arts?
Mature martial arts?
Something like violence festival.
I don't know what I mean. You covered pretty much every, like, this is just that movie now. You can't fucking, anyone who makes a movie after this, like, how am I going to fucking compete with
right.
What am I going to do that the raid couldn't do?
Yeah.
How much am I willing to hurt myself in order to be a successful actor?
Exactly. Yeah.
As you can see, there's a lot of times in this movie where someone takes a hit and it's got to be a real hit.
And they just keep rolling.
Like, there's so few uses of martial arts in this film. Like, I see the spurts come out of blood and, like, there's the knife wounds. It's kind of like, okay, that doesn't look all that great. But I'm over here wondering, like, how do you make it look like that guy's spine got wrapped around that railing?
Yeah,
how
exactly.
did you do that? You didn't have a great budget for special effects. What happened? Did he die?
He's a contortionist.
He's got a double jointed spine.
That's the only thing I can figure is that he has a special skill. I think one of my my favorite thing that hasn't been mentioned in it so far is during Mad Dog's first fight with like the big police chief guy.
Yeah.
There's a point to where the police chief throws him down behind him, and Mad Dog like makes a wild kick that he can't see in the camera focus sign. I really appreciate like he completely misses with that, but. You don't see missed hits like that. It's always people dodging.
Right.
And I appreciate them like adding that element of like, I think he's back there, so I'm going to swing.
Right, yeah. It makes it feel less perfectly choreographed.
Yeah,
I feel like you saw a couple of those where he swung wide and missed pretty bad.
Yeah.
But it didn't feel like it felt like the other guy was getting out of the way. It didn't feel like someone just made a mistake, I guess. Whereas like you see in every other movie you see a lot of people kicking way over each other's heads, like you won't even have to dodge. It's just pretty choreography or whatever. I don't get that feel from this. Least favorite thing in this movie. That's pretty hard. I really dislike the shitty cop guy, but you're supposed to, so I can't hate them for that.
Right.
I guess whatever trope that is of killing off the main bad guy without him really doing anything.
Yeah.
I'm not a fan of that. I appreciate the use of it, like subverting expectation, but I wanted more from that guy.
Mm. Yeah.
But overall, pretty close to a perfect example of whatever genre the Raid has created for itself. Like whatever Soulsborne of martial arts movies is now, it is.
Mm-hmm.
Raid-like movie.
Yeah.
So, 5 out of 5, Honey Badger guy.
Man does have the soul of a Honey Badger.
Yes.
I saw this movie for the first time when I was in China the better part of 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I was not ready for what I was going to witness. It was a lot of fun then, and I have to say that it was a lot of fun now. I think my taste has been refined significantly, but when it comes to martial arts films, this is just pure, refined. I wouldn't call it just violence because it's so crystal clear that these actors are incredibly skilled. I wonder if they're only able to do this because it almost looks like, oh, if you're Indonesian, apparently you're great at martial arts. And that's so ubiquitous in your culture that you don't have to go and find these super specialized people. Sure. Apparently they're everywhere.
It comes across that way because even the people in this movie that seem very just like schlubby out of the ordinary Joe Blow.
You've got drug addicts running down the corner and like throwing like kicks at people's heads.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So sure, this is a martial arts movie, but it is in a class all of its own. So I can't decide if I should compare it to other martial arts films as a consequence.
Sure.
And I'll go back like I'll just return to the fact that I can't think of really any Indonesian films except for The Raid and The Raid 2.
Yeah.
And I think that you basically can drop the mic at that point. The things that you guys have said that you liked about it, I have to agree with you. The fight with Mad Dog and the two brothers at the end is like, it's been 10 years and I still remember that decently well. It is absolutely incredible. And I agree that the cop who winds up shooting the mob boss at the end.
Yeah.
I think you made a good point, Brian, where I guess I'm supposed to hate him, but I feel like his character wasn't that interesting, but he was really hateable. So maybe that's all I needed because of how campy this movie was.
And we couldn't kill him because of fucking justice and Batman bullshit. Like he has to serve his time. At least cut his hands off or some shit.
Right. I wanted him to get locked in a room with the actual bad guy of this movie for like 10 minutes and just horrible things have happened.
Do
when
some
he comes
sex
out.
Stuff too.
Maybe not that.
Violent
not...
sex stuff.
Get the hammer involved.
Yeah. I'd probably say that the brother, who's not wrong, Andy, his character just, he's more of a plot vehicle. The fact that
I feel that.
That's probably the thing I like the least about it, even though I'm not completely confident that I'm justified in disliking his character. So, with all those things being said, it is still just unmatched, and it's incredible. So, I'll give it...
2.5
I will give it 5 out of 5 machetes everywhere.
It felt weird giving it 5 out of 5. I felt like it was like a 4.75. Like, I can't do that.
I will say the story is kind of the weak part of this movie.
I would say that, yeah.
So the action carries it real hard.
As a vehicle for the action, which is what it really is, it does a good – it does a fine job. It doesn't get in the way.
And that's why I get into the genre stuff. I can't compare it to other films because they're just way too different.
Yeah. Right.
That's fair. But for me at least, when I'm like, why doesn't it feel like a 5 even though the action is a 5?
Right.
For me, it's the story.
Yeah.
But
that's fair.
It's definitely –
Well, if you want a podcast where the action is a 5 but the rest of it is –
But the story is a 4. Yeah.
I think I've got a pretty rich character arc.
If you want to hear more of Brian's character art, start at the beginning and listen to all of our episodes.
You'll get to Brian for about 100, but...
You really have to understand like where the podcast was before Brian. You can find our episodes on our website, opinionatedpodcast.com. Additionally, we're on social media at OpinionCast on Twitter and OpinionatedPodcast on Facebook. Feel free to reach out to us at our email address, opinionatedmoviereviews@gmail.com. And once again, a huge shout out to Matt McGinty. Thank you for recommending this movie. We had a lot of fun watching it. If you get a chance, leave us a rating on iTunes and share us on Spotify. Between that and you sharing us with your friends, it's the best way we have of getting out to new listeners. We always appreciate you guys listening. And until next time, we're opinionated. Thanks for listening. Yeah, Brian, what would be bad about Rick lighting his giant blunts with one of the extended, like...
Weird angle.
What do you mean? Look.
I guess you're just holding away from me.
No, you...
You don't think that feels uncomfortable?
See, I got my furthest...
That feels kind of uncomfortable to me.
There you go.
You get your
pop filter on fire.
On fire. That'll be hilarious.
I mean, this chair would go up fast.
It would. It would be gone.
No. I feel like the amount of spit that I've soaked
you
into this
got
thing.
The bulls.
I feel like the amount of spit that I've spat into this pop filter would operate as just kind of like a default.
Maybe, yeah.
Fireproofing, I guess.
Michael does always complain about the smell of these things.
Well, tell her to stop smelling it. It's like, yes, we have had, these are the same pop filters we've used for 5 years.
Yeah, I clean some spit in there.
How do you clean? I lick it clean.
I scratch the stuff off.
That gross
stuff. That stuffy stuff.
Oh, you know, the classic sanitization process of just scratching
not
things.
Just staying there all crusty like y'all's are.
Not Brian.
What are you talking about?
Brian just wants to take that funk home with him underneath his fingernails.
Yeah, Brian, if I leave mine solidified in one mass, that means that it's not spreading anywhere. By you scraping it up, I think you've inhaled some other people's spit, my bro.
Yeah. Like, it calcifies into a solid mass. If you scratch on it, it gets released, it's aerosolized into the atmosphere around us.
who you text.
That's right.
Who your goddamn business.
So it's a girl.
Yeah.
What's wrong with that, Brian?
No, I just wanted to say
you
that.
You embarrassed that we got caught texting a girl.
What are you doing?
He's warming up his arm.
Why would you warm up
your drink? Why are you warming up your drink?
It's got ice in it.
To cooling all bastards. To melt the ice and make it warm.
Right.
Gosh.
It's just too cold.
And it's, it's like that clip from Hell's Kitchen season 2 or whatever where he's like, did you fill up the... Like, they're waiting. Gordon Ramsay's waiting on them to make more spaghetti.
Yeah.
Like, we're backed up to our ears with orders for spaghetti. There's no spaghetti coming out. What the fuck?
Yeah.
And then he's like, did you just fill that pot up with cold water? Yes, chef. Why? This is an actual line she said in the show.
Oh, please. Tell me she said it boils faster.
I thought that cold water was supposed to boil faster.
I've heard that. I have heard that.
From idiots.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm sorry, what? Why would...
I always assume, like, in my mind, how I justified it, like, the chemical reaction has not started. So
the chemical reaction?
What chemical? Heat isn't a chemical. Heat is just hot.
Whatever fucking reaction.
Water remains water.
What are you talking about?
What is the reaction of water?
Heat exchange.
Okay.
Yeah, it's just heat.
I always assume heat exchange is faster because it's like, what's the word for? Like, once it gets started, it's just like a chain reaction thing, whereas if it's already kind of lukewarm.
Exponential? Is that what you're looking for?
Maybe. That sounds kind of right.
Can you imagine?
Like if you got out of a hot tub into a cold day, it's like colder then because you were hot before.
Yeah. I mean, if that was the case, if you start up a cold car, it would heat up real fast.
God, I wish that was worked.
What? You know.
Why would it be true just for water?
Just for water.
I mean, some things are true for
water.
It's just a special.
Like what?
It's a solid body or something.
The only thing that gets.
Embiggen.
Less dense, yeah, less dense.
Hella thick when it freezes.
Yeah, exactly.
I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm. If it did not, it would sink, and like life would not be possible. Essentially,
yeah. It has to become less dense, otherwise it wouldn't float.
Yeah.
Well, why would that make life not exist?
Because everything in like cold places would get squished.
I mean, have you
people would just live in warm places?
No, I mean,
what
like,
do you
before,
mean?
Like before that was a thing.
Yeah, they just put on clothes.
No, like before they were people. Like when there was just like weird crusty crustacean blob monsters that roamed the earth in their tiny...
They just go to warmer spots.
They couldn't get
out. It might have been the case during ice ages that the frozen ice at the surface might have created a layer of insulation that allowed life to continue to exist in the liquid fluid underneath.
No. See, it wouldn't
That's
have
the
canceled.
Whole theory. Like,
it
wouldn't have Europa canceled. Might have life on it.
It wouldn't have canceled life because life always finds a way. And it would have done the thing that those dumb little frogs do, which is where they just like, oh, it's winter. We're just going to like bury our ass in the mud and then just stay here for like until it thaws. And there's frogs that have done that and like stayed there for like 10 years and then they'd come back out and they're like, oh, it's warm again. I can come out and be a frog.
You got to save the Jurassic Park quotes for when we do Jurassic Park.
Right. Also, we're not reptiles.
Yeah, but if we're talking about
we're
us.
We're warm-blooded. If you don't
yeah,
that way.
And if we're warm-blooded, we can just wear clothes.
Frogs are amphibians.
They are, but they're also reptiles.
Yeah, those
they're
clothes
both?
Wearing.
What?
In fact,
Wolverine.
That's pretty hot.
Those clothes wearing whales.
What are,
we learned Brian's got an amphibian fetish.
What are, it's just the fact that it can be both. What are axolotls?
I mean,
awesome. Is that what it's called?
No, frogs aren't reptiles. It's not like a square and a rectangle.
What are they?
They're amphibians. It's not one of those like all amphibians are reptiles, but not all reptiles are amphibians.
I mean,
they're two different.
It just means you go from water to land and vice versa. Whereas being a mammal actually says something about the structure of your body.
No, that's if you're amphibious, not if you're an amphibian.
Okay, this is getting weird.
Yeah.
It's let's like, talk about martial arts.
No, hold on. It's like saying something is mammalian, has some of the attributes of a mammal, versus is a mammal,
I
which has
God,
all
gosh,
of them.
If you put all 15 minutes of this stupid conversation at the beginning of the podcast and no one listens to it,